SQPN.com presents The Secrets of the Hobbit.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. Where to begin?
Welcome back to a new episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit, the show that is entirely dedicated to The Hobbit, the book by J.R.R. Tolkien, but also to the two movies that are currently in production in New Zealand. With me to talk, as usual, about The Hobbit and everything Hobbit-related is my good friend Dave Kale. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Father Roderick.
How is the weather over there in California? Do you have spring weather?
Yeah, we sure do. Although it's quite variable. We reached a record high over the weekend on Saturday, and then this morning it's cloudy and like 65 again.
Oh, really? Well, here in the Netherlands, it is Shire weather. It is the perfect weather for a stroll in, you know, through the beautiful hillside of the Shire. It's unfortunate that I live in Holland and not in the Shire. We don't have any hills, nor hobbits, by the way. That's why we talk about the hobbits instead. Much more appropriate weather for this Easter time than over in New Zealand. This morning I got a message from our good friends over in New Zealand. You might remember James from a couple of episodes ago.
Yes,
they let us know.
Have them back on.
Yeah, we absolutely should. They told us that the temperatures are really all of a sudden, you know, dipping into a really low end of the spectrum. It's getting chilly. It's autumn over there. It's the exact opposite of the kind of weather that we have over here. A good thing that they are filming mostly on sound stages right now, I guess.
Yeah.
And I guess that most of the filming outside in Matamata on the set of the Shire, and perhaps also, I don't know if Mirkwood, for instance, will be filmed in real forests. I assume it will be. They'll probably wait until the end of the year when it's springtime over there. Which gives us perhaps some time to, plan a trip to witness some of those moments. How cool
That's
would
right.
that be if we could do some live episodes from New Zealand? Oh, here's
especially
hoping.
After we sneak onto the set.
Yes, that would be wonderful. Well, we have some months left to plan all that. I doubt that they would let us onto the sound stages, especially not in this early stage of the production. They probably have to worry about a lot more important things than roaming podcast reporters. So we'll just gather our information from the interwebs. And at first this past week, I thought, you know, we don't have that much news getting out about the production in New Zealand. But then with some Googling, I did find quite a few interesting topics to talk about. And of course, I'd like to have your opinion as a Tolkien expert on a couple of these rumors that I found, some of which are rumors from several years ago, when the production was still, it still involved what's his name, the Spanish director, Guillermo del Toro,
yes.
And so I think I found some tidbits that are very important to, well, our speculation about how is this story going to be in the kind of the revised Hobbit incarnation that that Peter Jackson has been working on. Let's first talk a little bit about Smaug, the dragon. I was listening to an episode, I don't know if it's a radio show or whether it is a podcast. It's called Fictional Frontiers with Sohaib, episode 145. I'll include a link in the show notes. The host of the show had a conversation with Larry Curtis, who is one of the senior contributors to theonering.net. That's, of course, the go-to website about everything Hobbit and Lord of the Rings related. And a very interesting conversation. Really enjoyed it quite a bit. We should try to get Larry on our show as well. Larry mentioned an old, or actually a recent rumor on, and he himself didn't remember where he read that, but apparently on a website, someone said to be involved in the production of The Hobbit, And they kind of hinted at that we might have already heard Smaug's voice, that it was a voice that was also used in The Lord of the Rings. So it could be the narrator, perhaps, of some of the parts of the Lord of the Rings trilogy. It could be one of the existing characters. Or it could be a totally bogus rumor, because it has all the characteristics of a bogus rumor. You know, someone involved in the production of The Hobbit. Well, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people involved in the production of The Hobbit, so that doesn't say anything. No official statement on any of the the official sites that we know. It's not on Peter Jackson's website. It's not on any other site. So this could just be someone pretending to be part of the production and just kind of launching a rumor. And the rumor itself is extremely vague. It's like, you might have heard Smaug's voice in The Lord of the Rings. So everybody goes and rewatches the three movies, trying to figure out who could it be. And so I don't know, it keeps us busy as fans.
We need something to obsess about.
Exactly.
I would venture to guess I guess Smaug is a really important character, although he doesn't even have, when you boil down like the number of lines that he has in the book and the amount of sort of screen time he has, as it were, it's not even that much. But he has a sort of integral to the story exchange with Bilbo, which is very fun, where you sort of you get to observe in action the sort of charm and power of the dragon to sort of, you know, influence people. But I feel like, just totally uninformed with absolutely no information about this, I sort of feel like looking through some of the other rumors, Leonard Nimoy, James Earl Jones, I would venture to guess for a voice acting like that, they'll go with like a Kiwi actor or something like that.
I don't know. I have no idea. They could go with a well-known actor. It's, you know, mm-hmm. even though Smaug itself as a character is not perhaps the most important character in the story, it for the media, for PR,
it's very identifiable.
Yes, this is a story about a hobbit and a dragon, right? No, some dwarves, well, whatever. So I think that they will keep this a secret for a while, just to be able to use it for PR purposes. I mean, if they would announce everything right from the get-go, what are the newspapers going to write about? What are the fans going to obsess about? So I think that they keep this a secret on purpose. But of course, that does gives us some wiggle room to talk about these rumors. Now, Nimoy, that's an old rumor that we've talked about at length in previous episodes. Apparently, there's now an official reaction from Nimoy. He said in one of his interviews, because he's also, and that is something we know for sure, he has the voice of one of the robots in Transformers 3. I'm not sure. I'm not very much a Transformers fan, so I have no idea what kind of Transformer robot he will play. But anyway, the interviewer asks him, or the conversation is about, you know, him actually having announced that he wouldn't act anymore. And then he's like, well, this is not really work. I just do this for fun. And then they ask him about Smaug and about this rumor. And then he reacts, I've only heard about that rumor, and that's all I know about it. And I think that's true. So
I think it's pretty unlikely it'll be him.
His voice is too characteristic. I think pointy ears, not dragon, but
Plus, it seems like an unnecessary splurge in terms of budget.
Could be, although, you know, you want a good voice actor. It again, that could be a deliberate choice for PR purposes. All the other actors, except for Ian McKellen, are and the returning cast from The Lord of the Rings, but the actors that are new to the story are still quite unknown, or don't have the weight of like a star like Leonard Nimoy, or a guy like James Earl Jones, who is the voice, of course, of Darth Vader and CNN.
There's no chance of that.
This is CNN. This is Smaug, Bilbo.
There's no chance of Darth Vader to play Smaug.
I am your dragon.
That would be crazy. Jeremy Irons, I think he's a good selection.
He'd
like
be good.
Voice.
Again, this is total speculation. There's no rumor whatsoever about Jeremy Irons.
Just completely making this up.
Yes. Well, it's you know, you read this stuff on the forums on various websites. But Jeremy Irons, I thought it was a very good suggestion because he has already played a lot of these kind of evil characters, but also witty evil characters, or you know, very smart characters, like the lion in The Lion King. He plays what's his name, the lion's uncle, the evil lion. He's of course the bad guy in Simon in Die Hard 3, and mm-hmm. he's got various other bad guy roles. I think. Yeah, I could totally see a Jeremy Irons type of voice. Right? Also because his tonal range is a bit higher than James Earl Jones. I mean, I don't think a dragon with a very low voice would work. But that's just my thing. I want to have a very smart dragon.
Laura's tossing out Ralph Fiennes.
Could be.
Get Voldemort.
Could be. Why not? He's out of a job very soon.
Now they're saying about Father Roderick as Smaug.
No, not really. Unless you want to have a dragon that is from the Netherlands. I don't think that has much appeal to the international markets. Del Toro, at the Times, was considering Ron Perlman for the voice of Smaug. Perlman is the actor who plays Hellboy. And he's got a very characteristic voice. I kind of like that idea, although even in that interview, Del Toro already said, you know, I've got other plans for Ron Perlman. Of course, Hellboy was also directed, I think, by Del Toro. So
yep.
That's kind of something he said 2 years ago, so the chances that they still will go with Ron Perlman are pretty slim, but you never know. And then there was also, who played the bad guy in the Pirates of the Caribbean? The one with the beard, with all the kind of the tentacle beard.
Oh,
what's his name?
Who played him?
Chat room, come to our rescue.
Help! Help!
Yeah, it's on the tip of my tongue. But there's a delay in the chat room, so I just have to wait.
IMDb, Davy Jones.
Davy Jones. Yeah, what's his name?
I'm looking him up.
Gosh, I know who it is.
Is it Bill Nighy?
That's it. That's him.
He's pretty good.
Thanks to our audience, they've all been screaming at their iPod for the last 5 minutes. But we didn't hear it.
This is a podcast about The Hobbit. We're not saying we know anything about
there you
Pirates
go.
Of the Caribbean.
It's just to prove that we're totally into The Hobbit and that we are not at all into any other of the movies that we talked about previously. Star Trek, Star Wars. Wait, what are we talking about today? The Hobbit.
How about if we want to go really far afield, how about someone like Colin Firth?
Who is that? Colin Firth?
He's the British actor who was in The King's Speech.
Oh, I've not.
And he's like heartthrob.
Not seen that movie yet.
Really? Oh, you should definitely see it. It's pretty good. But he's been in like, I don't know, a lot of those... so he's been in a lot of to put it in the pedestrian form chick flicks. He's sort of a heartthrob. So if you could cast him as Smaug and maybe boost your viewing female audience, and he'd have this very sort of charming, suave British accent.
Who knows? A British dragon.
I think they should go for it.
Who knows? I wonder if they need just a voice actor or an actor that also knows how to act. You know, that they will use the facial movements, or you know, perhaps even the movements at all in general of the actor to portray the dragon. That's what they do for you know, some of the orcs and for. All the digital characters, they use the motion capture. I wonder if they're going to do that for the dragon as well, or whether that thing will be hand animated. I don't know. Anyway, it's good to talk about all these possibilities. I wonder when they're going to tell us, because, of course, they can keep this a secret for a very long time. Perhaps it will take them years before they reveal this, because Smog, we don't even know if we get to see Smog in the first movie. They might keep that for the second movie. Who knows? Laura is suggesting Alan Rickman. I know that there is a whole contingent of Harry Potter fans that would love that, and so that might be actually very smart marketing wise. If they hire Alan Rickman, that would bring in the entire Harry Potter, desperate audience. That because Harry Potter is over, so where to go next? Well, they can all come over and enjoy The Hobbit. Who knows?
I was thinking about that too. I don't know. I'm not sure he has that dragon voice.
At least
Smaug's. I see him as, if they were to ever make Silmarillion, I see him as the most prominent Silmarillion dragon, Glaurung, maybe. But who knows? It would be fun if they got someone like that.
Yeah, they can't use the actor who voiced Smaug in the 1977 animated version of The Hobbit, because unfortunately he's dead now. He died in 1981. At the time, Smaug was voiced by Richard Boone, who was mostly known for roles in westerns. So, well, that can happen too, that they just take someone, a completely unknown actor, or someone who's not at all known for, you know, fantasy movies. And Michael Dorn.
If I were gonna bet, that I would place my bet on someone we don't know.
Mike Kuipers in the chat room is suggesting Michael Dorn, Worf from Star Trek.
Oh yeah, there you
That wouldn't be too bad. He kind of has this dragon-like forehead already in Star Trek. All right, enough of the speculation. Let's talk about
to the next topic of speculation.
The next rumor. In that fictional Frontiers episode that I was listening to, they were also speculating, of course, as we all do, about the extensions of the story. Mm-hmm. And they had an interesting conversation about there being more dwarven history in The Hobbit, so that we get to see a little bit more background, or we get more background information about the dwarves. Where do they come from? What is their history? How did the elves and the dwarves got kind of separated, or why is there such a tension between the two? The two groups. What is the deal, you know, between the wars between dwarves and orcs, for instance? I can totally see that happening in flashbacks, and I think that there is ample material in Tolkien's original work that could provide a narrative for that. I mean, I can totally see one of the dwarves kind of telling Bilbo about the history of the dwarves. And I think even for, you know, the entire mythology, the dwarves are very interesting, because they're kind of like this almost they weren't supposed to be dwarves, right? Originally, the Ilúvatar, I think the elves were the first creation. And the dwarves were actually the result of one of the, I'm so bad with all these terms. What are the half gods that Ilúvatar?
So like
enlist?
The Valar.
The
and
Valar.
The
yeah, there was just one. Whether it was a Maiar or a Valar.
So it was. You're talking about Aule, the guy who made the dwarves. Right?
Yes. And he did that almost because he was jealous of the of the elves, and he wanted to create something himself as well. And so he created.
He was very. I'll be a little more charitable to him. He was impatient because the Valar, the good Valar anyway, were sort of impatiently waiting for the arrival of the elves that they knew were coming, but they didn't really know where or when. And they were very. Aule was very excited because he wanted sort of, you know, they wanted something other. They wanted sort of a race of beings who were other, but were sort of on their level almost, that they could teach things to and interact with. And Aule got kind of impatient and kind of decided to sort of go off and do his own thing, and make his own, you know, sort of like, you know, kind of in secret, like, well, you know, maybe I can kind of kind of sort of anticipate the elves and make my own sort of little guys. And that's where the dwarves came out of that.
And he wanted that interaction. He wanted to have creatures to interact with and to mm-hmm. be kind yep. of their leader or god or whatever. But of course, it became almost a dissonant tone in the overall melody of creation of Ilúvatar. And the problem was that once he created the dwarves, he discovered that he was unable to give them a free will. And
yes,
so at
right.
first, they were just puppets. They were marionettes. And he got bored, I think, at one point. I was like, this is not what I thought it would be. And I think that later on, did Ilúvatar kind of step in and grant them a free will after all?
So in the story, he makes them. He finds that they... I don't know if he even realizes it until Ilúvatar points it out, but Ilúvatar sort of catches him, you know, like you're going to be able to hide it from Ilúvatar, and says, you know, what are you doing? And Ali's like, oh, I'm sorry. And Ilúvatar sort of points out to him, look, you realize they have no life or thought beyond your own. They are, as you said, Father, they're just puppets. And Ali's like, oh, I'm sorry. And he's bummed and disappointed, and he realizes that he kind of overstepped his bounds. And then it's very interesting. We have Laura and I have a colleague. Well, you met him, Pungo, who's mm-hmm. Planning sort of a scholarly article comparing the story of Ale to the story of Abraham and Isaac, because Ale eventually offers
yeah.
to destroy them.
Yeah,
it says like, I'm sorry, I screwed up here. I'll just destroy them. And that's when he discovers that they now have life of their own given to them by Ilúvatar. And Ilúvatar sort of grants him this this grace, you might say.
Yeah.
And you know, because he knows that Ale didn't do this out of a wicked desire, but more out of sort of, you know, impatient love,
well,
you might say.
Yeah. And it was a desire for friendship. And mm-hmm. that desire in itself was kind of genuine. It's that he kind of looked for friendship in the wrong places, and he realized only afterwards. And I think that's why it's such an interesting and profound story, that you can create these puppets, these marionettes, but if they don't have a free will, they're unable to express true friendship. A friend is not a marionette, is not a robot. For
right.
friendship,
yeah.
for love, you need free will. And that's the thing that he overlooked. And I think that's the why this is so fascinating, that Ilúvatar, even though the dwarves were not part of the original plan, kind of recuperates them and grants them a free will.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a way, it's like creation can be something that is partly unplanned and can go in a different direction from the original plan, and Ilúvatar, being kind of the god of Middle Earth, still works with that, and it's as if the unexpected can still be part of the overall plan, because of course,
yep.
and after all, in the end, the dwarves are very important to the history of Middle Earth. And
yeah,
thank goodness
yep.
we had the dwarves. The dwarves also introduce a lot of the problems, especially
yep.
with their greed and everything. So they're flawed creatures, just like most of the creatures in Middle Earth. But at the same time, they're able to be extremely heroic and sacrifice themselves and fight the good fight.
Yeah, that is the potential downside of free will, that it can introduce conflict and differing viewpoints. But that, I think personally, you know, and we're getting into Lord of the Rings here, but I think that the story of Gimli and Legolas is when you look at it from the context of the larger overall story.
Mm-hmm.
The creation of the dwarves and the conflict that introduces, and then sort of the history full of strife throughout the Silmarillion. What's really cool about Gimli and Legolas, and especially the fact that Gimli gets to go over the sea, is that they are sort of the redeeming story of the elves
yes.
and dwarves. Those
it's,
two, it's it culminates in those two.
It's the ultimate reconciliation of,
yeah.
of these two races.
And. Yep.
The another interesting aspect is that in a way the dwarves are the opposite of what happened to the orcs, and the perverted creatures, because the dwarves were actually not meant to be. They're kind of like a flawed creation, but by the gift of free will, they became much more, you know, like part of the plan of Ilúvatar. Whereas the orcs are perverted elves. There were elves that were taken captive and put in slavery, and then, you know, all
and
sorts
they lose
of,
their free will.
And they exactly they become they
wow,
become
that's,
puppets.
That's
puppets
brilliant.
Of evil.
I'm writing that down. That's a great paper idea.
So, well, there is a and that might create that is a I think an interesting kind of opposition between the dwarves and the orcs, because there have been these constant wars between these two groups, and in a way it's the inverse story. Like the orcs are kind of
really is.
Like elves fallen from grace. The only difference with the story of the biblical story of the or the well I should say the Christian story, because it's more part of the tradition than it's part of the biblical narrative, but the fall from grace of the angels, that was a free choice they made. They turned away from God, and that's kind of how they became demons instead of angels, but they're still fallen angels. With the elves, the story is much more tragic, because it was against their will. They were actually forced into slavery, and ultimately they just completely lost the sense of free will, and so they are very. Oops, that's my phone. I should turn that off in the future. It's great to have friends. It's not so great if they call you in the middle of a show. Anyway, it's a very you can wonder, you know, is there redemption possible for orcs? Because you kind of they're horrible creatures. They do the most horrific things, but in the end, it's kind of it's not their fault. They're so under the spell of evil, of Sauron and his minions, that can you yep. really blame them for being what they are?
Interesting. Pity for the orcs. Interesting.
I'd love to see more about that original antagonism between both the dwarves and the elves, and the dwarves and the orcs in the story of the Hobbit.
Well, I think it would be super cool if they had a nice little moment where they had a dwarf recount their whatever teachings or beliefs they have about the creation of the dwarves by Aule. That would be super cool. I'm not too hopeful it'll get in there, because that's pretty obscure, but that would
well,
be fun.
It's obscure, but it's also very abstract. It's more yes. it's more Middle Earth theology than it's something that you can visualize. And
they could do a Deathly Hallows Tale of the Three Brothers little animated featurette.
Perhaps, yeah, that could be a way to do that. I mean, there are ways to tell this story, but you need to do it in a more concrete way, in a more you got to illustrate this instead of just having a theological discourse, because that wouldn't work, I think. And even if you look at the way that Tolkien writes about this stuff, it's very general. It's not there. We don't get that much detail about the ancient mythology of Middle Earth. So I think that's just the way things go. The same thing is true for the Bible. You know, these very ancient stories of Adam and Eve. You know, it's kind of broad strokes. Those stories are there to convey some very fundamental principles, almost like the foundation of the way the world works and why it is the way it is right now. But later stories are much more detailed and have much more of a kind of an historical slant to them than these early stories in the Bible. So in a way, Tolkien's mythology mirrors that difference between the more recent historical stories that can also convey values but the big story about, you know, good and evil, and how evil became part of creation and part of the world that we live in. I think that Tolkien's story is just as kind of broad and deliberately vague as are the stories in the first books of the Bible. I guess.
Yeah.
And that's not. I'm not judging those stories, I think it's you know, the it's almost like a different genre. Like the Bible exists of many different books, and every book is a lot of these books are from different genres. You've got very historical books, you've got more lyrical, poetic books like the Psalms and everything, and wisdom books. Tolkien in his writings also kind of creates these different genres. And just as much as you can't really do like a literal reading of everything that Tolkien writes and put every book and every story on the same, how do you say that, on the same level. You can't do that with the Bible either.
You can't read them all the same way.
No, a lot of the Bible books are not meant to be literal accounts of what happened. Or like it's not like a journalist was there at the beginning of creation and wrote everything down. And it's not meant to be a literal account. It's not meant to be read like that. That's not to say that there is not a historical foundation for these stories, but the narrative itself has a very different purpose and a different character. And I think the same is true for if you compare, for instance, the narrative of The Lord of the Rings to The Hobbit, there's already a very different style. And then if you compare that to the writings about the ancient mythology, like what we just talked about, the creation of the dwarves and everything, it's another narrative, has another function. Anyway.
It'll be fun if they get into. It'll be fun if they delve into some of the ancient history of the dwarves, or even the more recent history of dwarves.
Yeah, who knows? Well, we'll have to wait and see. And I hope that something will leak out about this, because it will give us more food for thought. Before we move on to more rumors about what to expect in the movie adaptation of The Hobbit, I want to take a short break and mention our good friends over at Bluehost. Bluehost is a hosting service that I've been using extensively to build my blogs and websites, and it is just great value for money. If you want to set up your own Hobbit fan site, or you've got, you know, you're an actor on The Hobbit and you want to post your behind-the-scenes photos for the world to see, of course you can do that on a free service like Blogspot or something like that. But the downside is you're very limited in how you can build up your site and how it looks. And it's sometimes very difficult to move to another level. You can create a beautiful website sometimes with these free services. But then how do you get that information out? That's what the problem with that we all have with Facebook. You can put a lot of value into Facebook, but how do you get it out of Facebook? And so I've been recommending Bluehost for months now to people because it offers you the opportunity to create your own website, your own blog. It has like one-click installation of a WordPress blog. You can install BBPress, which is kind of a forum solution, but also a lot of the PHP forum that is there. You can work with all the standards, basically. It's only $6.99 per month. And not only do you get free unlimited hosting and unlimited bandwidth, which means that they don't care how many people visit your blog. If it all of a sudden gets mentioned by Peter Jackson and you get like 10 million visitors, they'll take care of that. They're not going to bill you extra for that. You just continue to pay $6.99. Your site might slow down for a while, but I love that kind of fixed price that they offer. And for the $6.99 per month, you also get a true domain name. So you get your own free domain name, iaminthehobbit.com or something like that. Your website will sound in the URL as a real website, which it is. So I'm super happy with Bluehost. If you want to create your own blog, if you want to sign up for a while, and why not for that price, you might as well just try it out for a couple of months and then see if you like it. Go over to our website at thehobbit.sqpn.com. If you go to that site, you'll find all our previous episodes. There's also our Facebook page is included on that website. And you find a banner. If you click on that, it will let you try out Bluehost. So go to, again, thehobbit.sqpn.com, click on the Bluehost banner, and with that, you also support our show. Well, that was our little break. Let's go back to The Hobbit. Now, I read something somewhere, so you can tell that I did my research. I was browsing one of these forums where people talk at length about The Hobbit, and someone wrote in that forum that, and this sounded more like a fact than a rumor, someone said, Jackson is expanding The Hobbit to encompass the quest of Erebor, the meeting of the Second White Council, and the visit to Dol Guldur. Now, I don't know if this is something that Jackson has talked about before. Did you ever hear those things?
I don't know if I've heard Jackson mention that. You know, I've heard that he plans to expand the material, and I assumed that one direction he would go in would be to add the Quest of Erebor stuff. Just because there's sort of two obvious, in my opinion, there's two obvious ways to expand the material beyond what's directly in The Hobbit. One of those is the stuff about the White Council and fighting the necromancer of Dol Guldur, who turns out to be Sauron. And then the other direction would be some of the background material, which would be the Quest of Erebor, which is this fun little chapter in the appendix of The Return of the King, and then there's an expanded version in Unfinished Tales. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think I did some Googling on these stories, these three elements, and especially the first one makes a lot of sense to me. The Quest of Erebor is written in the first person from the perspective of Frodo Baggins. However, all the text consists of narration by Gandalf, and he is telling the story because Frodo asks him, you know, what actually happened, what happened in this when Bilbo was, you know, getting selected to help the dwarves. How did that come about, etc. So so Frodo has written this down, but he tells it from the perspective of Gandalf, and. You know, the whole Wikipedia entry on this is fascinating because it provides you with much more background on what was going on between the dwarves and Gandalf, for instance. Because the dwarves were not convinced that it was a good idea to enlist Bilbo's help. And so the Quest of Erebor, which is something that Tolkien wrote... probably around the time that it was finishing up the first part of The Lord of the Rings, gives us much more information about what was going on.
Yep. So yeah, it's pretty interesting. It's a fun little. I think it was sort of the first step for him of trying to incorporate The Hobbit more closely into the bigger picture.
Exactly, and since The Hobbit is. It was written as a fantasy tale, as a children's book. A lot of the events kind of sound a bit more wacky than what happens in The Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings comes across as a much more serious story. But with this background story that Tolkien wrote in The Quest of Erebor, he makes it more believable what happens. So it's not like the dwarves just walked in and is like, okay, yeah, let's just use this hobbit. No, there was actually a whole conversation taking place between Gandalf and Thorin and his dwarves. I'm reading here from the synopsis on Wikipedia. Because that's, yeah, unfortunately I can't do that from memory. There are two interesting aspects of this story. First of all, why bother with Smaug the dragon? You know, I can understand that the dwarves were obsessed with Smaug because they wanted to get back at him and take revenge. And it was, of course, also about the treasure. But why is Gandalf even interested in fighting this dragon? Well, apparently he knew that Smaug could pose a serious threat if... Sauron, who was at the time dwelling in Dol Guldur in Mirkwood, if Sauron would use the dragon in his evil schemes. And so that is why he kind of wants to enlist the help of the dwarves to go fight this dragon and storm that mountain. Because it would eliminate this potential evil for, you know, later battles by Sauron. So that makes it It gives it a much bigger context, I think, this whole dragon quest. And then about why Bilbo, Gandalf thought that Bilbo was a suitable companion for a number of reasons. He had observed that Bilbo took much more of an interest in the world at large than was usual for hobbits, so he probably was going to be much more adventurous. But more importantly... Gandalf knew that Smaug, the dragon, would not recognize the scent of a hobbit. Apparently, the dragon had never met hobbits before. And so this would be very advantageous to a stealthy operation like they want to undertake. And so even though Thorin did not think highly of hobbits, the having Bilbo being part of the expedition might also shield Thorin from being too rash and doing it the dwarven way, you know, like storming in and just openly challenging Smaug. Having a burglar on the team and being able to tell Thorin, well, you know, let's use the hobbit, it would heighten the chances of success. So Gandalf had serious doubts about the ability of the dwarves to, you know, elegantly bring this whole expedition to a successful end, especially because the dwarves in the past have already, you know, failed on previous occasions at kind of maintaining the peace in Middle Earth, like awakening certain monsters in mountains. So I thought it was really interesting. So I can totally see how the Quest of Erebor will be part of the first movie. You know, so instead of the movie just following the story, the existing story to the letter, I can see them kind of expanding this, and perhaps we will see these conversations between Gandalf and the dwarves and their doubts and everything, and see the whole debate taking place. I don't know. Could be interesting. And, of course, this also, the Quest of Erebor also mentions Dol Guldur and Sauron being there in Mirkwood at the time of The Hobbit. So that too, this whole story of Dol Guldur, which is something, I don't know exactly if this, how Tolkien, when he wrote about that, if that is a, like an appendix or something.
What's the stuff about Sauron being in Dol Guldur?
Well, that's what I read here on in the synopsis.
Yeah, most of the material for that comes from the Council of Elrond in the Fellowship of the Ring.
Oh, okay.
When Gandalf is doing his narrative about all the events that have led us up till now, and there's a few things. There's a few things in the appendix in the chapter that's actually called The Quest of Erebor. But yeah, most of that sort of material, I feel like there's a little less direct material for that's not true. Gandalf in the Council of Elrond recounts how he has suspicions about the necromancer, how Saruman is telling him, like, oh, no, don't worry about it. We'll take care of him later and all that. And eventually Gandalf gets sort of impatient and goes and sneaks into Dol Guldur to check. And he eventually sort of basically, I don't know if this... He's like walking down the hallway and runs into Sauron around a corner and realizes the necromancer is Sauron and runs it and gets out of there and goes and tells everyone. And finally the White Council says, okay, I guess we'd better do something then. And that's when they sort of make a move against him and drive him out of there. But it ends up being...
That sounds like awesome stuff for the movies, if they could show this.
Because I am sure that's going to be in the movie.
that is a problem, I think, of the... if you would only base it on the original story of The Hobbit, that is told from the perspective of Bilbo, and Bilbo has no clue what's going on in Middle-earth, because he's a hobbit. He just wants to, you know, have second breakfast and sit at the fireplace and you know, that have some parties outside. That's what most hobbits were interested in. And so he has no idea of what Gandalf is doing when he's absent from the story. And of course, we know that at various moments, Gandalf is gone and the Bilbo and the dwarves are on their own. And so, and this is something we know for sure, because Jackson and Del Toro mentioned it in an interview a couple of years ago, that at the time they said that in the first Hobbit film, Gandalf's role will stay true to the book. However, his absences during Bilbo's quest will be explored during the second film. So this would indicate that when they were planning the scripts for these two movies, they would... use the second film to kind of give much more depth to the story, which also makes sense from a narrative point of view. You don't want to overwhelm your viewers, your audience, with too much going on. we need to be eased into the story, especially because in the future, people will watch this in sequence. They will not start with The Lord of the Rings. They will start with The Hobbit and then move on to The Lord of the Rings. So it kind of makes sense to start with the perspective of Bilbo and, you know, perhaps see a little bit of the, you know, the conversations between Gandalf and the dwarves and perhaps a little bit of extra information, but that can still take place in the original kind of the original scope of the story. And then as the movie progresses, then hopefully it will, you know, just kind of open up in the first mm-hmm. movie. And then in the second movie, we get to this whole, you know, what else is going on in Middle Earth? And then we can see Gandalf just walking around there in Mirkwood. And we don't know exactly, I think, what Sauron looks like at the time. We know it's not the eye that it will be in The Lord of the Rings. So that could be...
But he also sort of technically... He should not be the guy wandering around in the black armor either, because technically after he had lost the ring to Isildur, he sort of lost his shape for a long time. So he really should be that's going to be the big problem. I see two problems. One, I think at this point he's kind of supposed to be sort of a shadowy. He's sort of more just like power. Mm-hmm. He's sure. just this dark power there, not like a guy sitting in a chair, uh-huh. you know, marshaling his forces. The other thing I wonder is how are they going to add him in without stealing attention away from the main story, you know what I mean? Because Smaug is really the villain of this story. Sure. And indeed, he's not even Smaug isn't even the climax of the story either. The climax is the Battle of Five Armies.
Right, so, right, exactly. Well, I
wonder if they put Sauron in there, is everyone going to, you know, like when they move on to the main climax of the story, is everyone going to be sitting around saying, "Where's Sauron? Shouldn't we be worrying about him?" So,
well, I don't think that's going to be a problem. I mean, I think it could just add to the threat that Smaug poses. If you know that this dragon has already been approached by Sauron, and that there's kind of this looming, kind of vague evil in the background, and you're not sure exactly, but you kind of feel that there's much more to this dragon than just a dragon. I think they have to play it more like what we see in the early books of Harry Potter with Voldemort. In the first few books, we don't really know who Voldemort is, and actually, I think he's scarier in the first few books than he is later on when we get to see him.
True.
Like, oh, it's just a dude without
yes,
a nose.
That's true. When he finally gets into the books and he starts making mistake after mistake, and Harry keeps escaping, he's like, this guy really isn't that scary anymore.
Yeah.
He's kind of a doofus.
Yeah. So I think that they can totally do that and then leave his ultimate revelation as the, you know, this very big danger for the Lord of the Rings. And in a way, it could also be like, I'm thinking of another analogy with Star Wars and Darth Vader. In the first movie, you think that Darth Vader is the ultimate evil. And then it's only later on that you discover that there's this hologram in the second movie of an emperor. And it's like, who is this emperor? And then in the third movie, that's only the time that you get to see this emperor. And it's only in the end of that story that you see how powerful he is, because in the first, it's very underwhelming at first to see the emperor. It's just like this tiny old guy. You know, how can that be a threat to the universe? And then in the end, you see how extremely powerful he is. And so I can totally see that with this movie, that perhaps in the first movie we will see a little bit going on, you know, around Smaug, because you cannot just introduce Smaug in the second movie, now that I think of it, because you need to establish that this is a real danger, right? And it's worth going on a quest for. So what I think is that they could show us perhaps Lake Town and the threat that Smaug poses to that town, and because that population is suffering and they want Smaug gone as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we might get to see.
Yeah, I would venture to guess. I think I agree, because certainly in the book, the dwarves, one of the very first things they tell Bilbo is that this place we're going to has a dragon. So Bilbo spends all of his time being scared about this, and so on the one hand, I hope they don't, you know, just show us the dragon in like the first 10 minutes of the movie, because that, you know, there could be a fun dramatic effect when they do their first reveal of the dragon after mm-hmm. building him up. On the other hand, I think you're right. They need to do something to set up not just the threat of the dragon, but also maybe connect him to Dol Guldur, so that when we go and see, when they do cutaways from the main storyline to Galadriel and Galadriel and Gandalf and all those guys going to Dol Guldur and fighting there, so the audience isn't sitting there wondering what the heck's going on. Why am I even watching this?
Yeah.
So I think you're right. I think they need to set it up early on. They need to either have Gandalf explain what he's interested in doing, mm-hmm. or they need to just sort of depict, somehow vaguely hint at a connection between Smaug and whatever is going on in Mirkwood.
Yeah, so. perhaps they can show, perhaps they won't show the dragon as such, but they can show the effects of the dragon.
Yeah, so his devastation and...
Right, exactly, yeah. or the people of Lake Town suffering or something like that. And then they can do the same with Sauron. He has no real shape yet, or he's not kind of, he has no body, but you can still kind of show him, I don't know, perhaps with a voice, whispering or whatever. I can imagine some visual effects that will kind of create this shadowy presence. It could almost be like... again, I'm thinking of the way that they did that with Voldemort in Lord of the Rings, which is kind of this ghost-like creature, or perhaps even like the smoke monster in Lost. There you go. I'm introducing another franchise. You don't know what the smoke monster is, but it's very threatening, and
that's
and
true.
It's very creepy. And only later on you see the kind of the when the smoke clears, you see. Literally, you see where the smoke came from and why it's so dangerous.
I think I would go with something like, I think I would choose not to put him on screen, or at least not much. I think I would go with the sort of the early Lord of the Rings strategy, where you kind of just depict like his tower and his forces, yeah. and you use that to just hint at his strength, his organizational strength. I think that's what I'd go with. I think he's scarier when he's not on screen. I think the minute he comes on screen, he becomes a little less scary to me. I didn't find the black suit of armor. I didn't find that particularly frightening. And yeah. You can put me firmly in the camp of people who are not big fans of the giant eyeball lighthouse.
Well, I don't know. I kind of like the way that they the eye is something that's staring at you as soon as you put the ring on, and it had. I don't know. It was not really super scary, but like, wow.
But it was really the only, I mean, everyone throughout the books, they refer to him this way. So it was, when you go and actually have to make it a concrete thing on screen, that was about your only choice.
Yeah, I guess so too.
They didn't have a lot. I don't know what else they could have done. They could have, you know, everyone's referring to him as an eye. If they didn't show him as an eye, the audience would be like perplexed.
Yeah, I kind of like how they did that with the fire and just creating this creepy eye. But your imagination is always bigger than what you can depict for real in a movie.
What I wonder, so getting directly into the quest of Erebor, the way that that's executed in the book, you know, as this little chapter, is two things. It's the frame is Frodo. Asking Frodo and the hobbits pestering Gandalf in Minas Tirith after the defeat of Sauron, when they're sort of hanging out there for a while and enjoying, you know, being friends of the king. And they're sitting around, and the hobbits, you know, who are endlessly curious, are saying, "Hey, Gandalf, tell us some stories, man." And in particular, like, you know, tell us more about Bilbo, and why in the heck did you invite him on this trip to begin with? And then Gandalf recounts the story of how he ran into Thorin in the Bree Inn, and Thorin comes and says, "Hey, Gandalf, I've been thinking about you." And Gandalf says, "Well, I've been thinking about you too." And Thorin invites him to come visit them, mm-hmm. the dwarves in their halls, and this is where they make the plan to go to Erebor, and they come up with this whole absurd plan of, we'll send in this small team of dwarves plus a hobbit, and we'll get the that sounds like a winner, and so I wonder how they will. I mean, I doubt that they will just start. I mean, I guess that could maybe be a sort of a 5-minute kind of intro sequence before they get to Bilbo, kind of like Galadriel narrating the creation of the rings. Mm-hmm, but I suspect maybe it would be more likely that they will either not directly depict it and just have characters discussing it, or maybe do a flashback or something. I think they're going to start. I feel like, to really be true to the book, they have to start the way the book starts, which is start with the Hobbit. You start with Bilbo.
But we already talked about this in a previous episode. The problem is that they already did that in The Lord of the Rings, at least in the extended version. That is a copy of the beginning of The Hobbit. And they did that on purpose, of course, because at the time they didn't know that they were going to make The Hobbit.
Yeah, they were going to make The Hobbit.
So if they start it like this, it's going to be almost like a deja vu, and it's going to be... I don't know how an audience would react to that.
Direction. Let's start with depicting the destruction of the dragon. We'll set up the problem initially.
I don't know.
Thank God we don't have to write it.
Yeah. I'm so curious. Well, they've been working on it for a long, long time, and I cannot imagine what an incredible labor that must have been to go through all these script revisions and thinking about it. I use an application, internet radio application, on my iPad, because I use the iPad a lot to listen to internet radio for some reason, and it's called TuneIn Radio. That could be my tip of the week, TuneIn Radio, and it you can also search for content with keywords. And so I typed in The Hobbit, and I found a show, it was just a radio episode, which is an interview with what's her name, Walsh, and the two ladies that are also working on as co-producers and writers of The Hobbit, and this was at the time of the big conflict between the studio and then this union of actors in New Zealand, and it was this very tense moment in the history of the production where they almost pulled out of New Zealand because of these problems, and they had just finished the script, and you could just tell they were just so exhausted and frustrated by all these practical problems, and they kind of tell the reporter, the journalist, you know, what an incredible work it had been, and you could just tell that writing the script and preparing for these two movies, that in itself was just an incredible work, and I just listening to it, I was like, you gotta admire their dedication to this story, to go through all these rewrites and then just having this responsibility of, you know, this story has to work because there are so many Tolkien fans out there, not to mention all the Lord of the Rings movie fans. They're all gonna, you know, be all over this script for the next 3 years. And so I don't know how they pull that off. I don't know how they do that. But it's huge. Hey, we're approaching the end of our show, and
we
can do.
We got halfway down our list.
Yes, exactly. Well, we'll keep something for next week. But before we wrap up, last week you hinted at a big announcement from the Tolkien professor Corey Olson. For a week I've been waiting in anticipation because you already knew what this was about. But please, please enlighten us. What is the big reveal?
So he revealed in an interview on Middle Earth Network Radio Live on Tuesday that he has gotten the permission of the Tolkien estate and signed a contract with Houghton Mifflin to write a book about The Hobbit.
Wow.
It will be called Exploring the Hobbit. It's going to be it's almost a reading guide for the Hobbit. It won't be an annotated book, an annotated version of the Hobbit, but rather it will be a collection of essays about the Hobbit. But they will go basically chapter by chapter, sort of the deeper thought, some of the deeper meanings and thoughts about the book.
Fantastic.
Yes, and it's going to be released on September 22nd, 2012, which is the 75th anniversary of the publication of The Hobbit itself. And Houghton Mifflin's apparently doing a huge celebration of that that anniversary, and part of that will be the release of Corey Olson's book. So
that's awesome.
It's going to be very exciting. It's his first official, you know, like Tolkien estate backed work, which is very, very exciting. Hopefully it'll Tolkien fans will eat it up and be very interested and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so. Just a wild guess. This is going to be a bestseller.
Well, yeah.
You got the Tolkien professor. You got the movie coming out right after that. It's got the official stamp of approval of the Tolkien estate. Yeah, this is going to be a big, big thing.
I think there might be some strategy at work.
Fantastic. I'd love to get the Tolkien professor on our show as well.
Oh, totally. We need to have him on soon.
Because many of our listeners don't know him yet. Although you should. You should absolutely check out his podcast and his website. It's fantastic. But I'd love to get him on the show and provide us with some insights about what this book is going to be about. And I assume that it will also use a lot of this the information that he has been distributing for free in all these wonderful podcasts that mm-hmm. make me feel like a total, you know, like noob in the world of The Hobbit and Tolkien. But I'm just mesmerized by his, the way that he just talks about the Hobbit and that just clearly shows that this is not just a children's story, you know. Mm-hmm. Tolkien is not just for kids. It's not just a fantasy writer. This is literature. And there
I think
is...
that's his, he's explained in his interview, that's part of his goal of the book is to show that this isn't just a kiddie book and that there's a lot of really deep stuff going on underneath.
And, that's one of the reasons that we started this podcast, The Secrets of the Hobbit, to show that there's much more to The Hobbit than just yep. another Hollywood blockbuster or a New Zealand blockbuster. It's that, too, but there's much more to it. So, very cool. I want to thank our listeners for their continued support of our show. I want to, again, refer to our website, thehobbit.sqpn.com. It's fully up and running. It's a place where you can leave your comments on our episodes. Let us know what you think of these shows. If you want us to continue or to stop, or, you know, have you got any suggestions or just, you know, just some feedback. We really need to hear from you because that's the only way that we know how you think about this show and how we can improve it. Also, leave us a review on iTunes if you have a moment or just give it a rating. Preferably lots of stars, of course. And tell your friends and family and fellow Hobbit fans about our show. We wish you, we're recording this just a few days before Easter, so we wish you a wonderful celebration of Easter, and hopefully you'll be back. I don't know if it's going to be next week, because I'll be in Rome, but we'll see. Next time, anyway, if you subscribe to our show in iTunes, then you will get the new episode automatically. Dave, thanks for joining me today. I wish you, too, a very happy Easter. And see you soon.
Yes, happy Easter to you, too.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.
Well, sorry, that came a little bit earlier than I thought. What a professional way to end the podcast. Hey, well, we're still learning, folks. I'll see you next time. God bless.